I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for our shape-up this week, our freelance writer Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre, and political science professor and blogger Lester Spence. Take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, thanks, Michelle. Yo, from WBEZ in Chicago. This is Jimmy Israel. This is my American life. What's up, fellas? How we living?
Hey.
Doing good,
How's it going, man?
Doing good.
Welcome to the shop. Well, you know what? Check it out. It's muy caliente down in Arizona these days, and the weather has nothing to do with it. The governor there, Republican Jan Brewer, he's yet
Jan,
to sign a
she. It's a Jan, she.
Jan,
yes,
really?
Hello. Yes.
Sorry. I was giving it a European flair, but okay, Jan Brewer.
Google, it works.
She's yet to sign a controversial immigration bill that, if signed into law, would give law enforcement the power to arrest people they suspect of being illegal immigrants. Wowzers, Michelle.
You know, and this has been such a big issue. So a number of faith leaders, civil libertarians, the president has spoken out about this today. And that's a complicated issue when a president, but we can talk about that in a minute, which I'm sure we will. But we should also note that both Arizona Senators John Kyle and John McCain support the immigration bill. Now, here's Senator McCain speaking on Fox News on Monday with Bill O'Reilly.
The federal responsibilities have not been fulfilled. Therefore, the state of Arizona is acting, doing what they feel they need to do in light of the fact that the federal government is not fulfilling its fundamental responsibility to secure our borders.
But
our
what
borders
about the racial
must
profiling?
Be secure.
You know that's going to happen.
I would be very sorry that if some of that happens, but I also regret people whose homes and property are being violated, drivers of cars with illegals in it that are intentionally causing accidents on the freeway. Look, our border's not secured. Our citizens are not safe.
Wow. Thanks for that, Michelle. You know,
who was that guy?
I know, right?
That's the maverick.
Him and Senator John Kyle, they want the president to send 3,000 National Guardsmen down to the border. And between this and this new kind of this new brand of American apartheid, nothing good can come of this. Ruben.
Bro.
The R. Now, you take on this issue with the immigration bill and this new piece you do for CNN. What's up with that?
Right. I got a piece up at CNN.com right now that takes on my old hero, John McCain, my former hero, John McCain. I've defended him on this show. I've defended him in the past. He and I have known each other for 15 years. But I have the advantage of not running for re-election in Arizona, so I can speak my mind and speak freely.
Well, there's that.
He has caved in to the fact that he's running a tough re-election campaign against what I call in the piece a cartoonish figure in J.D. Hayworth, who has simplistic some solutions to the immigration issue and plays and panders to nativist sentiments in Arizona. The biggest mistake that McCain is making, the biggest piece of dishonesty, and that clip with Bill O'Reilly sort of proves it, this notion somehow that you have illegal immigrants in Arizona because the federal government has failed in its responsibility. No, I was there. I lived in Arizona from 97 to 99. I was present at the creation of this problem. And I can tell you the reason that you have illegal immigrants in Arizona is because there's a lot of folks in Arizona who hire illegal immigrants. And so McCain is missing and not leveling with folks. He needs to admit that had those immigrants come up through the Arizona border and found no work in the state of Arizona, they would simply have gone points north up to Minnesota or wherever. And the fact that Arizonans have hired illegal immigrants to do all their chores and build their homes and cook their food and raise their kids, and now they want to bitch and moan about it, and they want somehow to convince the country that this is an invasion and some sort of a wound that's been inflicted from the outside, is just dishonest. And that's how I'll end. The worst thing I can say about this bill is not even the racial profiling thing. I mean, that's clear, the unconstitutional aspect, the fact that it's trying to usurp the government, the federal government's authority. Here's
no
the
doubt.
Problem. It's hypocritical. It is dishonest to bring a problem onto yourself by your own actions and then blame somebody else for it.
Can I ask a question, though, Ruben? I take your point. This is not to excuse any of it. I think it's worth mentioning. I should have mentioned at the outset that one of the reasons I think you're so disappointed in your piece makes clear is that John McCain has been one of the leaders on immigration reform in trying to try to forge a bipartisan consensus on this. The question I have for you, Ruben, as a person who knows Arizona politics, this is not an excuse. Could he survive a primary? Can he survive the primary if he doesn't support this?
He's dead. No, he's dead now. He's dead now, Michelle, because he had two he had two things going for him with most moderate voters in Arizona and most voters in Arizona: integrity and independence. And he has he has gotten rid of both of those. I was going to say something else. He has blanked away those things because now why vote for somebody who's impersonating a nativist, divisive political figure when you can vote for the real thing in J.D. Hayworth? So,
Lester, is McCain, is he all washed up now? That's it?
Yeah, I think so. What strikes me is Arizona, just a couple of years ago, they had like a $2 billion budget deficit, and they had to make a lot of austere cuts. Like, cities actually had to give up some of their loot to the state government. I think the two universities had to cut like $50 million for their budget. So what you see is a case in which state fiscal crisis kind of naturally, quote unquote, generates this hostility towards the poor and towards the non-white. So you're going to see this movement sweep the Southwest in regards to Latinos, and then other non-whites and poor citizens are going to be hit by it throughout the country and other places.
You know, Jimmy, can I ask you something? Because, you know, it's easy for us to say, well, he doesn't really mean that. It's just sort of politics. But do you think that's a legitimate argument?
No, you know? I don't. I mean, I'm trying to get at the R, man. It's like, look, you know what? And this is just me as a devil's advocate, right? Because clearly, the bill is just off the hook, right? But I mean, people are getting caught in the crossfire and the drug wars that are happening on the border. So we don't want a new American apartheid, right? But I want to hear a solution. I want to hear, what do we do? I mean, because clearly, this for me, this sounds like a move of desperation.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Hmm. Yeah, you need a federal solution, Screaming again. I mean, it's a federal problem. You need a federal solution. I've written a number of times, and I continue to support more resources for the Border Patrol, you know, more radar, more intelligence equipment, all the stuff that they need, the tunnel detection equipment. You know, we should probably stop telling our kids not to use drugs and cut off the supply so we wouldn't have a demand in the first place. But beyond that, you want to control illegal immigration, and you want to fight the drug war, and you want to do it at the federal level. You cannot have states take this on a la carte the way that Arizona has. This is like, now Arizona is like the Mississippi of the 1960s as far as the Southwest is concerned. It's a bad look.
Hmm. Right. And wow. And this is Pablo. And the other, I think you're right. I think it's redundant almost at this point to talk about the potential constitutional implications for the bill. I think one other party, though, that I think is worth spotlighting here that also has a target on its back as a result of the bill passing would be the police. I can't imagine that police officers and police officials are in favor of this, because not only does it set back, as former Mesa police chief George Gascon said, you know, community policing efforts back decades, but it also puts this legal spotlight on the police. You know, they obviously will open the floodgates for civil rights lawsuits, and rightfully so. But also, there's a provision in the bill specifically to allow citizens to sue the police for not complying with the bill.
Oh, whoa.
Complying with the bill.
Right.
That's the point.
There's another whole aspect of policing the police and watching them, making sure that they do the things that, you know, the nativist movement might want, which is troubling for everybody involved, it would seem.
And the state doesn't have the money to do it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I can't emphasize this enough. This is a local.
Right.
This is about putting all the emphasis on the local municipality to take care of all this stuff.
Just to tie a bow on that Governor Jan Brewer, she pledged $10 million in federal stimulus funds to bolster law enforcement efforts there. So she's saying she's going to take the federal stimulus money in part to support these efforts. So anyway, this is a very important story, and obviously we're going to keep an eye on it. And Ruben, thanks for that. And we'll link to your column so people can see exactly what you've been talking about. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop. We're talking with Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Pablo Torre, and political science professor Lester Spence. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. So you mean it's not Jan Brady? Really? Like, okay.
Dig the hole any deeper.
Marsha.
Don't dig it any deeper.
Pork chops and applesauce.
Okay, well, you know what? It's like this. All right, now from the world of sports, the first round of the NFL draft was last night, and there were a few surprise picks, and we'll get to that in a moment, but maybe the biggest surprise of the week from the NFL was the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, got suspended for six games for violating the league's personal conduct policy, Michelle.
Yeah, I'm really dying to hear what you all think about this. I'll just play, if you want to hear it, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell talking to reporters on Wednesday about this. I think a lot of people were shocked by this. Here it is.
You don't have to be convicted of a crime or even charged with a crime. If there's a pattern of behavior that reflects poorly on yourself, your team, the league in general, it's important for us to have early intervention to stop that behavior.
Just to clarify, what he's talking about is that Roethlisberger has been implicated in two different incidents involving young women. He was not criminally charged in either case, but the allegation is, and authorities say they didn't have enough evidence to sustain a conviction. That's why they didn't go forward, but they say that he basically engaged in some appalling behavior with women where he seemed to have pressured himself or pushed himself upon these women against their consent, or they were too drunk to actually give consent. So there you go. That's it, Jimmy. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Michelle. Pablo, listen.
Yes.
Suspended. Six games. Was this punishment a little too harsh for somebody who's not really been charged with a crime?
No, it wasn't in my mind. And actually, it's probably going to be four games because there's this good behavior sort of clause worked into it. But I think if you talk to most NFL fans, or at least the fans that I talk to who I consider to be reasonable folks, and myself included, you know, I think this was almost, you know, I think Roger Goodell could have punished him for harsher than this, and I think that would have been okay. And yes, I understand the concerns that Roger Goodell in these cases is something like Zeus, where you don't know what he's going to do. It seems at times unilateral. But Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, he was not charged with a crime. That's absolutely true. But you have this pattern, as Roger Goodell said, and if you comb through the 572 pages of the Georgia police report, I mean, if a fraction of that is true, I think the NFL, as a workplace, as a business, has all the right in the world to suspend a player for behavior that it deems to be reprehensible. And it's, even if you don't buy the allegations of sexual assault by the book, I think, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, let's put it pretty bluntly here, you don't have to dig around the league, you know, very much to find, as my colleagues have said, to find examples and opinions about his treatment of women. And this is something that's not a secret. And the fact that it's come out in the open twice now, and in that police report, there's a third incident that chose not to be prosecuted because the witness did not want to go forward with it, is troubling for a lot of reasons, even if there was no crime strictly committed.
Wow.
This is Ruben. I think when I heard the DA say, listen, I'm not going to bring charges, but grow up, Ben.
Yeah,
up,
exactly.
Right.
That was already the hint that obviously having read he read the police report before the rest of us did, and there was stuff in that report, and there since we've picked up things out of that report and heard it talked about, clearly this isn't just even like a straight sexual assault. This is like, you know, everything from public displays of things that ought not be displayed in public to sort of, you know, this idea of having sex in the bathroom to begin with. And it all just rubbed the NFL the wrong way and the NFL commissioner the wrong way, and I think I think it's a really good and important thing that he's been suspended for six games because people forget NFL, Major League Baseball, basketball, whatever, everything they have, all the money, all the fame, all the, you know, the fans love, and then the whole thing all comes from the league. It all comes from their participation in this very elite club, and there should be some understanding that it's not all about them; it's about the club too.
Right.
And when they disrespect the club, then they ought to pay.
Do you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see more stringent language in these people's contracts where there's a standard, that there's a new professional standard of decorum that actively discourages frat boy behavior.
Really?
And that's what I'd like
to
see.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Why?
Do you need to be told don't rape women?
I don't know.
Well,
Don't hold women in the bathroom without their consent.
Any kind of frat boy behavior. You know, I'm just done with these grown men behaving like college.
Yeah,
kids.
Maybe like fonts, you know, maybe like you know fonts, what? You know,
this is Lester, and I am a frat boy, right?
Okay,
so Lester.
Go ahead, Q.
Yeah, so there's a challenge when we're using language like grow up, like frat boy. But what he's engaging in, or what it appears he's engaging in, is the equivalent of sexual assault and harassment. That's really serious. And making it seem like this is like, I got three young boys at home. They're not doing this stuff.
Right.
Right? I mean, this is really, really serious, and he should use this opportunity to get help.
And real quick,
the thing I'm challenged with is that I don't like the idea that Goodell has the ability to determine what violates the brand and what doesn't, right? Hmm. Just kind of sort of arbitrarily. I really like that's when Jimmy talks about language, I think that's what he's talking about.
Can I ask Pablo about that? What about that? That is an interesting point because obviously, you know, contract negotiations are coming up, obviously, with the players. Pablo, what about that? I mean, this is a hard thing to defend, but what about that? Is that Is there any thought here that this just leads to, this is too much authority for one person to have over somebody's career?
I don't know. It does seem like that. And as I said, you know, it does seem unilateral at times. I just find it difficult. Well, first, on the practical level, for the union to win, I mean, the union will never agree to have specific provisions like that. I just can't imagine they would want that strict behavioral clauses to be universal among its players.
But they already have moral turpitude clauses. I mean,
I did exactly.
When I was in broadcast. I may still have one now. I have to check.
But right.
When I was at ABC News, I had a thank you.
Right. Right. And teams
don't ask, don't tell. Right.
And teams and teams do have specific provisions. For example, I know. You know, riding a motorcycle, Ben Roethlisberger also had a famous motorcycle accident.
Riding a motorcycle can be
prohibited by team-by-team basis, but to have it universalized is very tough. What I just wanted to say also, I mean, is that Tiger Woods, you know, everyone talked about him, and that was, as to use Ruben's word, cartoonish almost. And compared to this, obviously, that seemed almost tragic comic. This was simply tragic, and it seems on a level, because it has a criminal whiff to it, because it was allegations of sexual assault, this should be a bigger story in my mind than the Tiger Woods thing.
That's interesting.
I mean,
that's a good point.
The fact that you have police officers who are off duty complicit with Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. I mean, his assistants were an off duty state trooper and off duty cop. I mean, this speaks to a larger system.
Sure. And how did those cops? How did those cops treat their victims?
That's a good point. All of this is good points. Probably only have 40 seconds. I'm afraid, but we got to ask about the draft. Any surprises?
Yep. I mean, Tim Tebow going to the Broncos at the end of the first round, I think him landing there is a surprise. Him being picked ahead of more NFL-ready quarterbacks like Jimmy Clausen is a surprise. But yeah, I mean, he's people can talk all they want about Tim Tebow. I love the guy. You know, I just think he's great. He's a pure talent. He's a pure character. He's a guy who I think will be the opposite, the bizarro Ben Roethlisberger, if you will. But sports has disappointed us before, as we all know at this point.
All right, everybody. Thanks for everybody. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from our bureau in New York. And Lester Spence is a blogger and political science professor at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from our Washington, D.C. studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Peace.
Yep, yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.